Good morning. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Wednesday morning. And on a Wednesday, we are joined by the K-State Extension District. And we've got Jesse Gilmore and Wendy Powell this morning. How are you guys?
Pretty good.
Glad the weather is finally warming up consistently.
I'm happy to see it, although we could get a little rain and a little bit colder temperatures, but still, I'll take 50s as a cold instead of 30s as a cold. So, all right, Jesse, I know you've got some an event to talk about, as well as pollinizers as well, so I'll let you take over.
Yep, coming up here in a couple of weeks will be our April Kansas Garden or K-State Garden Hour webinar on Zoom. This month in March, we talked about landscape design principles and how to apply those to a new garden or landscape bed. This coming month, we will be talking about designing gardens for year-round food sources for pollinators. And so that's kind of going to feed into a little bit of what I'm going to talk about here. But that is available on our website. You should be able to register. If you have not already registered, one registration will get you access to all of the garden hours. We're doing one per month this year. If you have registered, you don't need to register again for that. But you can find more information about that on our website and on our Facebook page. So, pollinators. A lot of people are thinking about pollinators right now as spring kind of kicks into gear and bees start becoming more active. There are a lot of questions, not a lot of questions, but pollinator design for gardens is becoming more and more common. So there are a couple of things to think about when designing your garden for pollinators. The first step is obviously to pick the right plants. The second step is to add in deal sweeteners to attract pollinators to your particular plants. And then for step three, you want to practice pollinator-friendly gardening techniques. And that is not necessarily just for the plants that attract pollinators, but also plants in your yard and other landscape features. So what makes good design for bees? Purple and yellow flowers are the most attractive. A lot of people think that red is the most attractive color for bees. More on the, I think it's the left side of the visible spectrum of light wavelengths, which would be purple, blue, and yellow, will be more effective at attracting pollinators to the flowers. Pollinators do not just include honeybees. Most people, actually I'd say probably all the people I've asked when they are asked to give a pollinator, think of the honeybee first. And actually, one of the most common misconceptions about the honeybee is that they are a native species. They are actually introduced from Europe. They are arguably, and I'm sure there's probably a statistic for this somewhere, the most successful introduced species ever, because of how symbiotic their relationship is with pretty much everything on this half of the earth. We do have a lot of native pollinators too, native bees, butterflies and moths, also common pollinators, and then hummingbirds can be also, although they are probably the least efficient pollinators in the group. So for bees, when you're thinking of pollinators, most of the time it will be honeybees. You want close plantings of plant masses, and you want to add a water source nearby if you don't have a natural water source. So putting a bowl of water out for them to come to makes it more efficient and draws them into the rest of your plants. Deal sweeteners for pollinators. Plants with multiple flowers per plant. Usually you're going to see this in the form of spike flowers that have multiple flower heads on them. That makes it more efficient for them to gather nectar on one plant as opposed to having to travel to multiple plants to get the same amount of nectar. You would also want to have plants in your garden with pithy stems. So pith means that they're hollow, because native bees, about 70% of native bees are going to be ground nesters. The other 30% are going to nest in hollow stems of plants. So when you're doing your fall cleanup for your garden, instead of discarding the dead stems that now need to be removed from your garden, bundle them up and keep them together so that the native bees that are nesting in the stems can go through their life cycle. Usually this will be in bundles, but if you wanted to, you could leave the stems in the garden. Would look a little bit off in terms of cleanliness, but it is a good way to encourage more native pollinators. And then for the 70% that are ground nesting, don't use landscape fabric, which I don't like landscape fabric as a landscaping tool anyway, because mulch does much more for the soil than landscape fabric does. You would also, if you did mulch instead of use landscape fabric, you'd want to keep the mulch kind of thin so that the ground nesting bees can still get to the dirt and form their nests. So those are two ways to encourage native pollinators in your garden. And then use native plants wherever possible. Good plant choices. One of my favorites is going to be the beard tongues or any plant from the genus Penstemon. Usually the species that you're going to see is Penstemon digitalis. In our area, it's a very common prairie plant. Liatris or blazing stars. Literally any plant in the mint family is going to be a very good attractor of pollinators. You do want to be careful because specifically peppermint and spearmint, they have a habit of getting out of wherever they're grown and being incredibly invasive and hard to get rid of. My mom, she thought it would be okay if she put mint in a bed that was kind of walled off by rocks. The mint escaped and is now taking up about a third of her backyard. So always nice when you're mowing over it because you get hit with the mint smell, but not great if you want a more aesthetically consistent yard. Some other plants that are good pollinator attractors. Golden currant is one of my favorite plants because it's commonly used as an edible landscaping plant. They get a lot of very bright yellow flowers pretty early in the spring, and you get hit with an intense fragrance of vanilla and cloves. So it's a very good smelling plant and very nice to have near a patio or deck, and it gets a lot of flowers on it, and the fruit is edible, so you would get a little bit of benefit from that as well. If you're looking for a good tree to include for pollinators, linden species from the genus Tilia are going to be your best bet. Beekeepers love this tree because it makes very good honey, and the bees go crazy for this tree. Puts out a ton of flowers. In America, they are more commonly referred to as basswoods or basswoods. When marketed, linden is more of the European name for the tree. As long as they are from the genus Tilia, they're going to be pretty much the same species. And then Lobelia, cardinal flower. That is one of the more showy flowers that would be good for attracting hummingbirds to your garden if you wanted to choose plants specifically for hummingbirds. And obviously, this list is not exhaustive. There are a bunch of good pollinator plants you can include in your garden. That would definitely be worth contacting the extension office for if you wanted a more comprehensive list. And then there are a couple of practices that would help keep pollinators alive and kicking. First is to tolerate any bugs you've got in your garden, especially if you're trying to attract butterflies. You can't just support the adult form of the insect, you also need to support the larval form, which means that you're probably going to see leaf damage to some of your plants as they're feeding on these plants, especially if you've got milkweed. They love feeding on the leaves of milkweed. But understanding that that is necessary for these pollinators to go through their life cycle and not necessarily enjoying the damage to your plants, but tolerating it, especially tolerating weeds in your yard. Dandelion, I think, is A very hated plant, but it is one of the most common pollinator plants in the country. And people try to kill it because obviously it's keeping your yard from looking pretty consistent. If you do need to spray weeds in your yard, make sure that you're spraying your herbicide before these plants go to flower, because if pollinators are attracted to the plant while it's got herbicide on it, those chemicals can be toxic to the pollinators and their nesting sites. So timing your herbicide application correctly will minimize your impact on pollinators. And then, as I mentioned before, putting out a water source for them in the garden if there isn't a natural one nearby. There are some resources to determine pollinator plants and best practices for managing different parts of your garden. One book that I would recommend is 100 Plants to Feed the Bees by the Xerxes Society. The Xerxes Society, or Xerxes, not 100% sure on how that's pronounced, but X-E-R-C-E-S, they put out a lot of good publications on pollinator-friendly practices and plants native to North America, and not just all of North America, but different regions in North America. So they are a very good resource to consult if you are interested in more specific pollinator plantings. The University of California has a bee pesticide database where you can look up any chemical that you are wanting to apply. Could be herbicides, could be insecticides, could be fungicides, and it'll tell you the relative impact of that particular chemical on bees and practices that you can use when applying them to minimize your impact on bees in the area. The Kansas Native Plant Society, if you are looking for native plants, and then obviously your local extension agent, if you had any questions about bees or about garden practices.
So you talked at the beginning about certain attracting certain. Is there a way to prevent, if you didn't want a certain type of pollinator and you wanted it instead of just the specific as opposed to attracting them all?
Yeah, so most of the time you're not going to really have a choice as far as bees go. If you're attracting honeybees, native bees are usually going to be attracted to it as well. You do have more control over whether or not butterflies or moths come to your plants depending on which plants you choose. Most pollinators are actually going to be specialist feeders instead of generalist feeders, especially if they're feeding on a plant itself and not the nectar from the flower. So the book that I mentioned before, 100 Plants to Feed the Bees, it designates which pollinators it attracts. And I would say about half of the plants in there don't attract butterflies or moths. So if you did want to attract butterflies or moths only, I would say there aren't very many plants that would not attract bees. And I understand that that can be kind of important, especially if you've got a bee allergy, because that is a problem that some people have. So there are better options if you don't want to attract pollinators. You would want to focus more on foliage plants that mostly use their leaves and not put out super showy flowers that would attract bees in large numbers.
All right. Well, that's some great information about different types of plants for pollinizers. We are coming up on needing to take a break. When we come back, we'll have Wendy on to talk about fertilizers. So we will be back here on the Mighty 690 coming up here in just a bit. As we get to the top of the hour, we have Fox News followed by local news again here on the Mighty 690.